Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 63 in the series, entitled Living the Lie, recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 12th of Adar, 5759.
Morning. We are up to Perek Chav Dalet, the 24th chapter in Tanya. In the 23rd chapter, the Alter Rebbe explained what is the essence of Torah, of mitzvahs, of learning Torah and observing mitzvahs, explaining that Torah and mitzvahs essentially are the exposure, the manifest revelation of Hashem's essence, because Torah and mitzvahs constitute Hashem's will and wisdom, His inner will and inner wisdom, which according to the Kabbalah and Chassidus is one with Him. Now, as the Alter Rebbe explained, when Hashem Himself is totally exposed and revealed, and there is no opaqueness, there are no masks, there are no disguises, then the truth emerges. The truth that in essence there is nothing detached, distinct, separated from Hashem. The sense of separation, the sense of ego that characterizes the universe stems only from the fact that there is a facade, that there is a concealment. The concealment allows and creates the dynamic of separation. But when there are no disguises, it becomes obvious that the world and the universes are nothing but an expression of the divine energy, an embodiment of Hashem's speech, of Hashem's creative energy that speaks the world into being, that it has no identity outside of the godly, spiritual energy that's continuously invigorating it and bringing it into being. And not only that, furthermore, as the Alter Rebbe explained, the Hashem's word, Hashem's speech that speaks the world into being, that creates the world, that gives it its identity and design, is always absorbed in the speaker. And just as in a human being, when his word that's expressing a feeling is still absorbed within the emotion, it doesn't have an identity there, it can be defined as a thing. It assumes status and eminence and value and significance only when it leaves the speaker's emotions, but within it's still absorbed in the speaker in the presence of this, when it's still absorbed within the speaker in the presence of the emotion that has really no name, no identity, it's totally nullified within the intimacy of the speaker's emotions. So the words, for example, the words, I love you, when those words, those letters are still within the emotion itself, they have no presence outside of the emotion. They have no distinct identity that deserves attention. And the same is true about reality. The divine word that speaks the world into being is always present and submerged within the intimate identity of Hashem, because there's no space devoid of Him, so the speech never left the speaker. So if we were to be in touch with reality on its deepest level, we would realize and feel that there is nothing but Hashem. Reality is Hashem Echad, and creation hasn't changed that a bit. However, there's a process of concealment. Hashem desired that the world should not experience itself initially as nothing, as pure nothingness. So in creating them, He concealed and obscured this truth. There is a disguise which grants the universe the permission to define reality in other terms. Not exclusively as God is one. That's not the definition we give to reality. We give other definitions to existence. And the more profound the concealment, the more the real story is being covered, the more we define reality in terms of separation, detachment, and severance from Hashem. How does Hashem experience reality and the universe as something totally unified with Him? Prior and post-creation is identical. Creation did not compromise His singularity, His unity, even one iota. Because for Him, the disguises don't obscure the vision. Because, like Dr. Eber explained in chapter 21, the disguises themselves are godly, so they're transparent. He sees through them. But from our perspectives, the concealments and facades achieve their goal. That they introduce the perception that there is an I outside of the divine I. They accomplish their goal. I feel my ego. Several days before the Alter Rebbe passed away, he passed away on the 24th day of Tevis in the year 1812. He lay ill in bed in a small little hut in a Russian hick town that was called Piena. And the Alter Rebbe summoned his grandson, who later became known as the Rebbe de Tzemach Tzedek, and at that time was a young man, approximately 23 years of age. And the Alter Rebbe pointed upward and asked, he said, Mendel, that was his name, the Rebbe de Tzemach Tzedek's name was Rebbe Nachum Mendel of Lubavitch. Mendel, what do you see? And the Tzemach Tzedek responded and said, Zayde, I see the rafter. And the Alter Rebbe said, and I don't see the rafter. I see only godliness. But when we look up, we see a rafter. And a rafter is a rafter. But what is the truth? The truth is a rafter. Hashem is one, Hashem Echad. Not because the rafter doesn't exist. That's an error. Not because Chassidus teaches that the rafter is an illusion. No, it exists. Not only it exists, but according to the Alter Rebbe's perspective on life, which he explains later in Tanya, the purpose of Hashem's creation is fulfilled within rafters and the like, within the physical world. What the Alter Rebbe is saying is, what is the true definition of the rafter? What is the true meaning of the rafter? Hashem is one. There was once a Polish chassid, a very pious, God-fearing, spiritual Jew. His name was Rabbi Yoel. And he was a chassid of the holy Reb Mordechai of Lechwitz, and known as a very extraordinary, special Jew. And he would from time to time travel to his Rebbe, Reb Mordechai of Lechwitz, Reb Mordechai Lechwitzer. One day, this Jew who owned a tavern, and he was surrounded by a lot of coarseness. He suddenly became spiritually thirsty. His heart went on fire, dying to hear some words of inspiration, some words of encouragement from his Rebbe. So what does this Yid do? He leaves his tavern, he gets onto his horse, and he travels to Lechovitz, to the holy Reb Mordechai, to hear a var, to hear something that will rekindle his spark, that will reinvigorate his soul, that will give him new energy in serving his Creator. Yerach says, Rebbe, he didn't live that far from Lechovich. He ties the horse to the home. He comes to the home. And since he was so thirsty, he was so hungry for some things, he didn't think much. He started to knock, to pound on the door very hard. And he said, Pischuli Efenov the Tir, open up the door. That day, the holy Reb Asher of Stalin came to visit Reb Mordechai Lechovich. And when Reb Asher heard the heart pounding on the door, he got scared. And he asked, who is it? Who is it? So Reb Yoyo responds in Yiddish. He says, Ich, it's me, I. And suddenly he hears the voice of his Rebbe, Reb Mordechai, saying, where is there a creature in the world who can say I? In the Haggadah we say, in the Haggadah of Pesach we say, Ani Hashem v'lo yacher. The Haggadah quotes the Pasuk in Parshas Bo, Hashem describes the process of the Exodus of Egypt being performed by Ani Hashem, by me, God. I am God, and Haggadah explains, Ani Hashem v'lo yacher, I'm going to do it and nobody else. So Reb Mordechai explained, what is Ani Hashem v'lo yacher? Homiletically, the meaning is, only Hashem could say Ani. Only Hashem could say I. V'lo yacher, nobody else can really say I. There's only one being that can say I. When Reb Yoyel heard that, he didn't need anything more. He turned around. He did not enter into the home. He turned around. He took his horse and he went home. That was enough for him. The Rebbe gave him back his soul. What's the meaning behind this? The meaning is that only the opaqueness allows us to experience ourselves as an I. Only the hester, the concealments, allow us to grant validity to an I outside of the divine I. In truth, there's no I. My I is totally absorbed, melted away, drowned, submerged, unified with Hashem's I. I read just a little while ago an interesting story about the Alter Rebbe. And I think the story requires explanation, and we're not going to get into that, but I feel that the story has some relationship. The message of the story has some relationship with the message of these chapters. Everybody knows, after the passing of the Baal Shem Tov, in the year 1760, the Baal Shem Tov passed away on Shavuos Tavkuf Chav, 1760. So the center of Chassidus shifted from Mezheburz, where the Baal Shem Tov lived, to the town of Mezrich, which was the home of the Baal Shem Tov's successor, the famed Magid of Mezrich, Reb Dov Ber, who was the teacher and spiritual mentor of the Alter Rebbe. And the Magid had what was known as a Chavraya Kadisha, a holy group of extraordinary spiritual disciples, pupils, students who learned with him and from him. And among them were people like the Alter Rebbe, Reb Levi Yitzchak Barditchever, Reb Mendel Haradaki, Reb Zusha Vanapali, Reb Melech of Lezhensk, and so on and so forth, just to mention a few of many. Late one night, a group of the Magid's disciples were discussing the state of the universe. One of them says, you know, if Hashem would entrust me with running His world, I would do it very differently. I would gather all the gold in the world and give it to the Jewish people. Let them be able to serve the Almighty free of all material cares. Of course, then we know the state of poverty that was so common in Jewish life was indescribable. And Jews struggled so hard just to put bread on their table to support their children, to feed their children and their families. So he says, you know, I would just take all the gold and just let them be people. Let them be free. Let them be able to pursue what they really care for and are in love with. Another student of the Magid says, if I were running the world, I would do it very differently. I would heal all the sick. I would banish all pain and suffering from the face of the earth. And then a third pupil speaks up and he says, and if I were to give in and the opportunity to govern this world, I would eradicate the Yetzer Hara, the inclination for evil from every human heart. then we would have a world that befits the goodness, the perfection that it's really capable of, etc. And then somebody else spoke up, and this was the youngest of all of the disciples of the Maggid, the Alter Rebbe. And the Alter Rebbe said, if I were in Hashem's place, I would run the world exactly as He does. You know, I wondered, they also knew that Tzadik Hashem Bechal Derachav, as the Pasuk says. Hashem is righteous in all His ways. Hashem knows what He's doing. Obviously, that wasn't the issue. It seems that the message, perhaps, the message behind Alter Rebbe's words is that ultimately, man has to become comfortable with defining reality based on its truest terms. And that is that Hu Levad Hayu, that He is one alone and there is no I whatsoever. As the Alter Rebbe explained so powerfully in chapters 20 and 21 and so forth. So in any case, this was the main point in the chapters 20 and 21 and 22. In chapter 23, the Alter Rebbe continues and drives the point home and says, where do we go from here? There is one product existing in the universe and in our life in which there is no opaqueness. Everything else is impacted by the tzimtzum, by the disguise, by the concealment. Everything else. And that's why it has a awareness of self. It has a self-consciousness. Even the highest worlds. There's one product, one item, one article that is a reminder or is a remnant. It's really inappropriate words because this is not about the past. But in a way, it's a remnant of the pre-Tzimtzum mode of reality. What is that? Torah and mitzvahs. Torah and mitzvahs are expressions of Hashem's intimate eye. It's the only planet which was not impacted by any Tzimtzum, by any opaqueness. Hashem did not conceal Himself to bring them into being because they constitute His very eye, His very intimate self. They are who He is in His very essence. So in Torah and mitzvahs, Hashem's eye is manifestly present. There are no masks and no cover-ups. The raw truth of truth is exposed. That's what Torah is, that's what mitzvah is. Here you have Hashem's inner eye. This is His intimate, quintessential will and wisdom. And in the presence of an eye, of Hashem's eye, there is nothing outside of it. All the words are absorbed within the speaker. The world is nothing but an expression of Hashem's word. The word is absorbed in the speaker. In the presence of that eye, there's nothing but Hashem Echad, one God. So what is a mitzvah? What is Torah on its deepest level? A mitzvah is Agdal Terebe. Torah is living the truth that Hashem is one. When a Yid performs a mitzvah, he enters into a space where there's no concealment. A space in which the only reality is Hashem. When a Yid does a mitzvah or learns a piece of Torah, he transcends at that moment all of the facades and he touches that space where there is only God and there's nothing else. And here, I want to add something parenthetical because after last week's class, some people approached me with this question. And something that was perhaps a little confusing. Everybody knows that in the literature of Yiddishkeit, there are various books, commentaries, essays that deal with what we know is time. We know is the subject of timing mitzvahs, the rationale behind mitzvahs. In fact, the Rambam himself dedicated a large part of his book, Meir Nevuchim, The Guide for the Perplexed, to explain a rational reasoning for all mitzvahs. In the literature of Kabbalah, there's a lot of discussion for the reason behind mitzvahs. in many places in Chazal, and in Medrash, and in later commentaries in Rishonim, and in Acharonim, and in different books of Musar, and Chassidus, and Jewish spirituality, and Jewish philosophy, and so forth. In the commentaries on Chumash, there's a lot of explanations for the reasons of mitzvahs. There's a sefer called Sefer HaChinuch that explains many of the reasons and the significance behind the 613 mitzvahs, and so forth. Here, in chapter 23, the Alter Rebbe tells us that the ultimate significance of mitzvahs is that mitzvahs is the way to perpetuate Hashem's unity in the deepest way. Mitzvahs is one with Hashem. Mitzvahs is the manifest revelation of Hashem's intimate eye. And the truth is, as the Alter Rebbe explains in various discourses of Chassidus, mitzvahs are the truth of every level in which one experiences reality. There are various levels in which we can experience reality, like I said before. On the deepest, deepest level of there are no disguises, there's hu levadehu, Hashem is one alone. That's it. Hashem echad, Hashem is one. If there's a subtle disguise, then the creature that is created from the divine energy that is disguised with that subtle facade experiences some subtle level of self. Some identity of self, even if it's the most spiritual and exalted and celestial self. The more dense the concealment, the more powerful the sense of self. When the concealment reaches real density and real profundity, it produces creatures that he said in chapter 22 are defined as klipa. And so there are many, many worlds and many realities and many philosophies and many perspectives on existence and so on and so forth. Each one is a product of another type of opaqueness, of another type of disguise. A mitzvah is the truth of every level in which you perceive reality. So for example, there are books in the literature of Kabbalah, the writings of the Arizal particularly. There's a lot of discussion as to the impact and effect of every single mitzvah on the higher spiritual worlds, on the chemistry of the celestial world, the world of Atzilus, the world of Bria, the world of Yetzirah, the world of Asiyah. Those are the four general Kabbalistic worlds discussed later in chapter 39 at length. In other Svarim, particularly in Chassidus, there's a lot of discussion of what a mitzvah, or the antithesis of a mitzvah, does to a soul, to the human psyche, to the human spiritual consciousness. In other books, in Chassidus as well, and in other Svarim, in Musar, and in some commentators, the Chinuch discusses this, what a mitzvah does to the psyche, to the psychology of a human being, to the spirit of the human being, to our emotions, to our heart, to our mind. And yet, there are other books that discuss the significance and value of mitzvahs from a pure physical point of view. How they enhance and allow us to live the most and the best and healthiest physical lives. And different books and different parts of Judaic literature discuss mitzvahs from different perspectives. So there's in Kabbalah it's discussed on a totally metaphysical level, and then there's discussion on a philosophical level, and on a psychological level, and on a spiritual level, and then on a very practical level, on a concrete level, and even on a physical level. So the Alter Rebbe explains, on every single level, the mitzvah is the truth of that level. The mitzvah is the best way to live on that level. If you want to maximize your physical life, you want to live the healthiest life physically, the path of Torah and mitzvahs is the path. If you want to live the healthiest life on a psychological level, Torah and mitzvahs allows a person to maximize and get in touch with his own psychological truth and live the most serene and fulfilled and content life. And the same is true with a spiritual level and a metaphysical level and so forth. But what is the point? What is the quintessence? What is the real truth about mitzvahs? What is the essence of Torah and mitzvahs? Zogt Alter Rebbe, all of these explanations only exist in the post-Tzimtzum reality where there's an I. And the question is what the mitzvah does for the I. There's a spiritual eye, there's a physical eye, there's a psychological eye, there's a higher eye and a lower eye. But what is the real truth about mitzvahs? What is the essence of mitzvahs? The significance of mitzvahs begins before there is an eye, in that space where there's only the divine eye, where hu levadai hu, a mitzvah is he. Torah and mitzvahs is Hashem's intimate self. So all the reasons and rationales given for mitzvahs are true in the level that they address, in the level of reality and in the perception of the reality they address. They are the truth in that level of reality. Here in Tanya, in these chapters, the Alter Rebbe is stripping the mitzvah from all external layers, going through all the stratums and bringing us face to face with the essence, what a mitzvah is. A mitzvah is Hashem on the deepest level. So a mitzvah, a Jew gets in touch with the truth that Hashem is one and there's nothing outside of Him. This is chapter 23. Now, in chapter 24, the Alter Rebbe will explain that there's something that diametrically opposed to Torah and mitzvahs. Just as we explained in chapter 23, the Torah and mitzvahs are the path, are the vehicle through which we connect with reality in the deepest way, through which we connect with the oneness of Hashem in the most truest way. There is something that's diametrically opposed to Torah and mitzvahs, a life in which man lives in a fashion in which he is totally detached and separated from Hashem's oneness. And what is that? Sin. Transgression. When a Jew transgresses the divine will as it's defined in Torah and in Halacha, that is living in a way that's diametrically opposed to the oneness of Hashem. When a Jew sins, as the Alter Rebbe will explain, when a Jew engages in an aveir, in something that constitutes an act that Hashem defined as a sin, as something that's antithetical to His desire, he is defining his reality as what? As something that is totally ungodly and unholy. He's defining the I at that moment as something which is detached from Hashem. It's so detached from Hashem that it can reject Hashem's will and desire. So in other words, the moment when the Jew sins, he is defining his reality just as the Klipos and the Sitra Acher, the unholy realms, define their reality. They receive sustenance each moment from Hashem's word. Essentially, they are expressions of divine energy. Furthermore, they are submerged in Hashem's oneness. But nonetheless, they define themselves as distinct and separated from Hashem, as independent creatures. That's what Klippa is all about, as discussed in chapter 22. Tragically, when man sins, he strips himself from his true self, namely, a being who is godly, who is holy, who is spiritual, who is sacred. A being who is one with Hashem Mamish. And he puts on a big mask, proclaiming that he is who he is not, proclaiming that he is ungodly. That's what a Jew is doing when he sins. He redefines his reality as something unholy, ungodly, to the extent that he's rejecting Hashem's will. Why can I reject Hashem's will? Because I'm totally detached from Hashem. Hashem's will is totally irrelevant to me. Here the Jew puts on the most powerful mask. He defines himself in terms of something that he totally is not. He is not ungodly. But that's what a sin is. Sin is proclaiming me and God are disconnected. God and I are disconnected. Furthermore, Alter Rebbe will show that through a sin, the Jew degrades himself even more than the spiritual energies and beings that are defined as klipa, that are defined as sitrach, or the unholy realms, which in Gemara and Kabbalah that are usually called Avodah Zarah, idolatry, or Elokim Acherim, alien gods. They never combat Hashem's will. They have powerful egos, but they don't combat Hashem's will. In Bilam's classical statement that he quotes, Lo'ucha laver ispi Hashem, I cannot violate the commandment of Hashem. I have an ego. I am I. But somewhere, somehow, I have a superior. Klippos and Sitrach lead an independent and autonomous and distinct life. They are indifferent. They are pathetic. They're detached. Perhaps they even have a cold war with Hashem. But when I sin, now I engage in an active war against Hashem. Here, I tear myself away from reality far deeper than Klipos and Sitzer Achir can ever dream, can ever imagine. This is the unique opportunity given to the human race. The Jew, as well as the non-Jew concerning his mitzvahs, can alienate the world and his reality from its own truth in the most powerful way. Klipos don't have an opportunity to violate Hashem's will. Man has the opportunity to reject and combat Hashem's will. Here, he perpetuates the falsehood of a world detached from Hashem in the most powerful and extreme way. And now let's learn inside. V'zeh Perek Chav Dalet, 24th chapter. V'zeh lo'umazeh. Now everything in the realm of holiness has its counterpart in the unholy realms. So mitzvahs have their counterpart. Torah has its counterpart. So in chapter 23, we discussed what mitzvahs are, what Torah is in their true essence. Now in chapter 24, we go to the opposite extreme, to the zelo umazeh, to the counterpart of Torah and mitzvahs, which accomplish the same thing that Torah and mitzvahs accomplishes in the exact opposite way. Torah mitzvahs allows the Jew to realign himself and his universe with the truth of reality in the deepest way, with Hu Levadehu, Hashem alone exists. And you have now the opposite of that, the Zelumaza. What is that? Hein Shasa Mitzvahs Loisasa Deiraisa. The 365 prohibition stated in the Torah, v'chol isurei derabbanan, and all of the rabbinical prohibitions that are defined as the antithesis of Hashem's will, like the Alter Rebbe will say, me'achar she'ein neged ritzoyne v'chachmasa yizbarach, since they are contrary to Hashem's will and wisdom, v'hav chamamish, and they are the very opposite of Hashem's will and wisdom. It's not just they're neutral. They are opposite of Hashem's will. Hashem does not want them. Hashem rejects them. Hashem says, this is something that's abominable to me, that's opposed to me. So, heim nifrad mi yichud yizbarach, va'achdusa yizbarach, betachlis hapirud mamash. They represent total and complete separation and detachment from Hashem's unity and oneness. Mitzvahs constitute Hashem's inner will. So by performing a mitzvah, by learning Torah, the Jew lives the unity of Hashem. Through a mitzvah, the Jew lives the truth that Hashem is one. Through an avera, through a sin, the Jew lives the lie that there's something outside of Hashem in the deepest way.